This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good evening. This is a rare feeling these days. So let's enjoy the next hour. Off the back, ladies and gentlemen of the Green Army and other parishes, a Plymouth Argyle win and yet another Plymouth Argyle win on the road. I mean, I say yet another Plymouth Argyle win on the road. Number three is what I'm trying to get at. Plymouth Argyle returned to winning ways after what felt like a lifetime ago in the first game post the Ian Foster era. Last night, on Friday night, at the disposal of newly relegated Rotherham United, live on Sky Sports through a wonderful move, starting with Morgan Whittaker on the right-hand side, across to Barley Member on the left, who took a touch and bang, fired the Pilgrims to 3 points. Three massive points, especially in context of what's gone on around the Championship this afternoon. I'm sure we'll discuss that a little bit later on. Of course, we are recording on a Saturday, so, you know, bear with us if we're all off kilter a little bit. We're not used to these Saturday recordings, but we're going to try our best. As always, you may have noticed I'm not Aaron, I am Joe, back in the hosting seat on this occasion. And joining me tonight, the three mugs in attendance this evening, we have, wearing a lovely salmon pink jumper, Ben. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you, mate. Excellent, in fact. Maybe not quite as good as I was at halftime in the 3 o'clock today, but still, nevertheless, very happy.
We'll come on to that later, and in true match of the day fashion, if you don't know the results yet, look away for the next hour, because we are probably going to touch on them at some point. But we do plan this evening on having this programme wrapped up by 9 o'clock, so that we can all then go off and re-watch that wonderful performance on the ITV football show at 9 o'clock. Fresh from the call centre, Adam Price, how are you?
Hello, yeah, very good, thank you. And I remember it wasn't too long ago that when I came on, we'd only ever won. So it's great to, you know, start getting back in that run of things again. And hopefully with my forthcoming appearances, they'll bring victories again.
Well, yeah, fingers crossed. And of course, stand up if you love Neil Jusnip and Kevin Nanskerville. Sam down. Oh, wait, you already are. How are you, Sam?
Oh, it's good to have a game after a win, isn't it? Oh, it feels good. So much better not to be angry and stressed. Yeah, really good. Thank you.
It certainly is. Couple of bits of housekeeping this evening. I am on sole producing and hosting duty this evening. So if I do take a little bit of a while to come round to your comments, and I do apologise. As always, do like, comment, subscribe, share, retweet, post, whatever it is you need to do to get the podcast around the usual platforms this evening. We do obviously invite your input and your questions, which will be styled up and put to the panel throughout the course of the episode. Don't forget to subscribe on YouTube. It is always better to get your questions in on YouTube, because you actually have a bigger box to put your questions in, and then we don't have to block Sam out, which obviously the people don't want, as he is the people's champion. And last but not least, you may notice on the right hand side of your screen this evening, the Argyle Life shop is open with much Argyle merchandise. We've linked up with several very good producers of Argyle paraphernalia for you to go and have a look at, and they're, you see a green and white podcast hoodie and a rather fetching Argyle beer mat mug, hence the mug reference earlier on. But Sam, you got back in the early hours of the morning. You were one of the thousand heroes in that away end in Rotherham. Why don't you talk us through this wonderful turning point? I'm going to say it. I know it's only one game, but it is a turning point because there was a freshness in the air, wasn't there?
Yes, it's certainly potentially a turning point. And obviously, it's very important on Tuesday we carried that energy forward. But yes, to talk through the game, I did go to the game. I got back in. I think I saw my bed at about 4:30 in the morning after a long trip back with lots of motorway diversions from Yorkshire down the Devon. Absolutely delighted. And it's just days like this that make you think that's what makes the bad days worth it. But with all the excitement, the build-up this week, all the TikToks and the photos and everything that Argyle have been putting up of this squad, how happy they all are, it was great. And look, it was great to see them smiling again. But in the back of my mind, I was still a little bit worried. If we don't win on Friday, all that bad vibes could come back. So I was a little bit worried in that respect going into the game. I was more nervous than I've been in a while going into a game, because in the Foster era, I wasn't often nervous because I wasn't expecting much from those games. Whereas I was very much nervous because I didn't know what to expect. We won. That's the important thing. We got 3 big points that we needed, which puts us a long way towards survival. Performance-wise, I love some of these comments. Was it the best performance I've seen? No, but it was far from the worst. Very far from the worst. I think we grew into the game. I thought the first 20 were a little slow. We had that goal line scramble where I think about 6 different players could have put it in, but none of them quite did. And then we obviously then got more into the game, got more in control of the game. And I think when Barley Mumba put us into the lead, we were good value for that lead at that point. Going into the second half, I think that was probably our poorest spell of the game, if I'm completely honest. We obviously, Cooper had to make a decent save. We were just looking like we were just a bit lackadaisical with the ball, but then we really regained that momentum. You know, it's okay to have a bad spell if you get through it. And we did get through it. We regained control. I think the subs freshened things up well. I think Forshaw, who I think has been a bit hit and miss in recent weeks, was good off the bench yesterday. I thought Wayne really added energy, added impetus, you know, momentum to the team. His pressing was excellent. Less said about his finishing, the better, but everything else is very good. Wayne made a difference. Forshaw made a difference. And I think really in the end, it was relatively comfortable, wasn't it? I never really felt like Rotherham were going to go and do it. Cooper had to get a couple of crosses out of the air. That was about it. Rotherham were a poor side and obviously have now been relegated down to League One. But it was much more comfortable than the home game against them, really. The home game we had, you know, we were fighting for our lives. We had a last-minute winner to win us it. Whereas that one, it didn't really feel too much in doubt. Despite the fact that it was only 1-0, we had the chances to absolutely bury them. And in truth, if Ben Wayne had his finishing boots on, we probably would have buried them. So I'm happy with the performance. I'm not ecstatic with the performance, but it was certainly better. I do think we're going to have to raise our level a bit for the visit of QPR on Tuesday, because they are one of the best teams in the league on away form recently. Obviously, they're down the bottom end of the league, but since Cifuentes has come in, their form away from home has been fantastic. So we're going to have a tough game on our hands. But yeah, great improvement. Incredible, much needed 3 points. The scenes at the end where the players were all jumping up and down, hugging each other. Nance Gaville was fist pumping the Green Army. And what I really loved to see was the two lads who were left out in the cold, Callum Wright and Dan Scar. They were both pushed forward by the other players. They were almost as if they were saying to them, no, you have your moment, you go forward. And Scar and Wright, who I thought both had good games, they, something caught in the throat. They both, were pushed forward to receive the adoration of the Green Army. And they deserved it because they both played their part in the win, without a doubt. Very, very happy. Results today put a little bit of a dampener on that happiness, but we can just keep winning. That's all we can do. And if we win on Tuesday, I won't say we're there if we win on Tuesday, but I think that will mean we go above QPR now. And if we win on Tuesday, we'll be nearly there.
Yeah, pretty good synopsis. And as I mentioned, I really do take my hat off to the 1,000 or so. I don't actually know what the official figure was last night, but it was 1,000 or so that were in Rotherham. And
it was 1,005, funnily enough.
1,005. Well done to those five, whoever they were. But the one overriding thing about that support last night was just how loud the Green Army were. It really came through on the Sky Sports broadcast. Adam, Sam touched on the performance there. Why don't you talk us through the goal that sealed the fate, really? A brilliant move that ended with a bit of Morgan genius and a bit of Barley brilliance.
Yeah, and it's really reassuring, I think is the way I put it, actually, that they have still got it. You know, like Ian Foster hasn't managed to coach all of that out of them. And actually, now we've got Ballymumba in arguably his strongest position. Within one game, he's gone and scored a goal. I mean, is that a coincidence? I'll leave it for everyone to decide. But it was a really nice bit of play. I know on the broadcast, the comments about is it a little bit of nasty defending? Has Revan misread it? And maybe he has. But regardless, from Whittaker, it's the perfect ball. He just about beats his man. He gets it to Mumba, who's on rushing it. And pleasingly, when Mumba gets into position, then he finishes it really coolly, because we've had a few situations this season where Mumba's got in front of goal. I'm thinking the chance before he scored against Middlesbrough. I'm thinking Blackburn away, where he's got the ball in those exact areas and just let it get away from him. There was no question of that today. Clearly, or yesterday, I should say, clearly a bit more confidence in, and he's put it into the back of the net. And against one of the better goalkeepers in the league, which I guess we may as well come on to. But yeah, it was part of a good performance without being amazing. Now, it depends really how much you want to caveat that, because we were the better team, and we were the better team by a long way. So the thing that we have to look at for the performance is, well, how much can we read into a game against Rotherham, who are appalling? You know, I've said it before, I'll say it again, they're the worst team in the league by every metric you can think of, and by quite a distance as well. I think relative to level, I probably have them as worse than Forest Green were last season, and Forest Green were outplayed by the creative genius of James Bolton in their game at Home Park. So that probably speaks a lot of volumes. So Tuesday will be interesting. I know we're going to come on to it later, but if we can keep up the spirit and the freedom that we had against an admittedly much worse side, we're in a good place. And I guess we'll be able to tell by how we play on Tuesday just how much actually we can read into a performance against the worst team in the league. But I guess that is why hindsight is 20/20, and why I don't know where it's going to take us from here. But regardless, we got the win. We were the better side. And at this stage of the season, with this much on the line, I don't think you can ask for more.
Yeah, again, struggled to find anything to disagree with there, which is a good trend for the rest of the program, I suppose. It should all, you know, we should do one final bit of housekeeping. Obviously, it's really tough on the supporters of Rotherham who've had a torrid season, really. You know, it's never nice being the first club relegated. It's never nice being one of the three that will go down, but certainly not the first to be relegated, and in such a fashion as well, where it looks like they've, bar that Millwall game on Easter Monday, wouldn't it have been? They seem to have gone out with a bit of a whimper, and you just hope that one, you know, last year they bucked the trend by staying up after promotion, and hopefully the club can get back going forward, whether that's with Liam Richardson or not in charge. Ben, Sam, I'm going to come on. I know you've got a bit you want to say on a couple of players. We'll come on to that in a bit. Sam touched there. There was a spell in the second half where perhaps our level of performance did drop a little bit. Was that due to us? Because it was at the start of the second half, wasn't it? It was pretty early in the piece in the second half. Do you think it was linked to, I'm going to throw a couple of things at you. Was it linked to A, Rotherham's triple substitution? Was it linked to B, us bringing Callum Wright off, bringing Adam Forshaw on, and perhaps just taking a little bit of time to adjust to that? Or was it C, we were just feeling them out after their triple change to see if they could actually lay a glove on us?
The obvious and easy answer is to say it's a bit of all three, wasn't it? But I think we didn't start the first time.
That's not what we pay you for, Ben, is the easy answers. We pay you for the good answers.
You get what you pay for with me. I think both halves we started a little bit slowly, and I think that might be the leftover nerves. And we felt our way into both halves. Of course, the second half, as you say, they made some changes, and I do think we were trying to work out, and I think Nance then made, or whether it's Nance or Juice in it between them, they made the substitution and the adjustment, which seemed to slowly sort of bring the game back in, under our thrall. I think more than anything, it was just a case of we've got the lead kind of thing, and in the second half, and just not wanting to sort of rock the boat. Just what could go wrong might go wrong, often does in recent weeks. You know, how many times have we sort of got through 0-0 in the first half, and then it's gone. You know, it's the second half where everything's fallen apart. Sky said we're either first or second with Rotherham for the most second half goals conceded. So I think it may have just been a little bit of that mentality, the hangover of, look, not just are we 0-0, but we've actually got the lead here. Let's just, you know, not do anything stupid, which you can understand. And then I think the players got a grip of what Rotherham were doing, what their changes were, intended to do. And I'd say that the staff reacted, and then the players also did a job, and then it was quite comfortable. Apart from those few sort of long range shots, etc., there wasn't much that Rotherham offered, and we could have produced more and finished more. But certainly it was a lot more encouraging. I don't think anyone really expected us to be back to our fluid and vibrant best, and even the confidence amongst the players, as uplifted as the spirits will have been from and how the mood looks from the pictures from training and everything this week, it's very different to go out on the pitch and sort of put it together under a lot of pressure. So I don't think anyone was, as Sam said, it wasn't the best of performances, but it certainly wasn't the worst. And I think that's about what we were expecting, hoping for. I think that's the best we could have hoped for, and that's what we got. So I think over and all, we can be pleased with that. Like you say, I think that there were things we had to adjust to, and that having got the result over the line, one can only hope that sort of reticence early on in both halves will have been put to bed. There'll be that little bit more confidence that we can control a game as we used to, and that can be in evidence against QPR and thereafter for the last five games.
The statistic that just brought up on screen there from Stevie Vaughan probably just underlines that perhaps it was a bit more of a cautious approach to the start of that second half yesterday, knowing that is perhaps when we are at our leakiest. Let's take a trip around the social media platforms then. Let's get some full-time thoughts from everyone before we touch on some individual performances. We'll start this week on Facebook. Andy Bartlett says, full survival mode, performance doesn't matter. Huge 3 points, another three on Tuesday, and we're 99% there. Like your optimism, Andy. Julian Holiday says, what a tremendous result tonight for Argyle, and a massive shout out to the 1,005 of the Green Army who never stopped singing throughout the match. One match down and five important matches to go, starting off at home next Tuesday against QPR. John Turpin says, we did what we had to do, got those 3 points, and what a second half save by Coops. Ross Matthews says, unbelievable travelling fans. Keith Jenkins says, Argyle did what they went up there to do, could look an even better result if tomorrow's scores go our way. Yeah, look away now, Keith. Andy Thompson says, the Rotherham keeper made several good stops, could easily have been 0-3, and then we'd have looked a lot better than a 0-1 scoreline suggests. I think that goes with the general consensus that perhaps 1-0 did flatter Rotherham more than it showed that we perhaps flattered to deceive a little bit. On to X for some full-time thoughts. David Stevens says, relief, but Argyle played well and deserved the win. The defence was excellent. Good team selection. Scar and Wright very bright on their return. The only downside was not putting one of those excellent chances away to kill the game. John Biggs says, points are all that mattered. While not perfect, the performance is so far ahead of what we have been served that recently it shows how far we fell. Bring on Tuesday. Andy in Oxford says, bold selection. There are those who keep saying Joe Edwards is not quite championship level, but I sighed with relief to see he was starting, and I don't think he put a foot wrong all night. maybe it's time to acknowledge he's a decent footballer as well as a leader and a legend. I'm not sure any of us have really doubted that he's a decent footballer, to be fair. Then we've got Christopher Vowles, who's in the comments tonight. Good evening, Christopher. Says some real positives. Edwards restored some grit. Wright was lively and did well in supporting Mumba. Wayne kept the defenders occupied when he came on and should have scored at least once. We'll touch on that in a bit. Scar looked comfortable on his return. The team seemed to be working hard for each other. We'll take one more before we take a quick trip to Pasotti Corner. We'll take one from Libby Green. Says should have scored more. Rotherham were rubbish, but it's 3 points and a confidence booster. Let's take a quick trip to Pasotti Corner before we get some thoughts on individual performances. Mark Smith says didn't really enjoy most of that. Got the 3 points, but Rotherham were poor and we couldn't capitalise. We're not out of the woods yet. Forest of Dean Green, really happy, although we played a very poor side there and we will need to be better and more clinical against teams who are a cut above Rotherham. Which is 22 other teams in the league without us. KR749 says the result was all important, so well done to the players and coaches. Not pretty, but hopefully we'll build confidence for the games ahead. Thought the back three were excellent tonight, holding a tight and high back line. Callum Wright had a good hour, but was beginning to look a little leggy, so the substitution was well-timed and Forshaw did well when he came on. I think we can allow Callum Wright to be leggy, given he hasn't played in 13 matches, I think. David Stow, the Sky commentator, said last night. Doozer says it wasn't pretty, but who cares? Huge 3 points. The three centre-backs were outstanding and great cameos from Forshaw and Wayne. And we'll finish, last but not least, with Warney, who says there's no way we were instantly going to revert back to our pre-Foster style after just 3 days. We were more offensive, though, and considering how little time we've had this week to prepare, it was a decent enough performance against a very poor side. But we all knew that 3 points was the only thing that really mattered tonight. We achieved that. That is the first step in our recovery to remain in the league. So let's get some thoughts from the three of you on players. Just another reminder to you all, get your comments and questions into the chat this evening. And we will post the, we'll obviously show the comments on screen, but we'll also put the questions to tonight's panel. So little game for you all. You're allowed one player and one player only. If the person before you names the player that you were going to choose, that's tough luck and you've got to try again. So we'll go with Adam. You can have first dibs. I'm just trying to wind Ben up because I know this, you know, he wants to talk about the players individually. So Adam, you can have the first dibs. Who do you want to talk about?
Thanks. It's a relief. Dan Scar. You know, he has been out of the team for reasons that I think are fairly clear at this point, for much of Ian Foster's reign, and has come back in to the sort of game that completely suits him, and he's completely delivered in a game that completely suits him. Now, I think there was a clamour almost to see him start for a couple of reasons. One, because Foster left him out in the cold, and seeing him come back in alongside Wright was an indication that we are fully putting the Foster era behind us, which is obviously crucial for our prospects of staying up. And secondly, because we know exactly how Rotherham do and were going to play. They are the Championship's long ball team, and they were going to fire off some long balls to whichever big striker they wanted to put up front, be that Nombe Wike or eventually the familiar Tom Eaves, who came in and again tried to cause some grief.
Who never seems to age. I felt like he was 31 when he played up front for Gillingham. Like, he never seems to get any older, Tom Eaves. It's annoying.
Yeah, it does also mean that in 10 years' time, we will still be facing him, which is enough to give anyone palpitations. But I think even so, facing him yesterday, and we know what he's always like, Scar, for the want of a better way of putting it, had him in his back pocket. He was trying all his tricks, as we know Tom Eaves does, to try and get a yard on him, to try and, you know, tuck him back and get that yard of space in the penalty area. And Scar was having none of it. Ultimately, an excellent performance coming in. I mean, he's been in 14 duels there and he's won 13 of them. And it's almost perfect. You can barely ask for more. And for a player that's been out in the cold for so long and has, by all accounts, been mistreated, I am delighted that he's come into a game like this and he's put his stamp on it. And he's been a key part of us winning the game. And obviously there are other keys, and I'm not going to touch on them because I don't want to stumble over some players that Sam or Ben want to mention. But Scar, for me, terrific.
Ben, you're up next. You're in the hot seat.
Yeah, there's one player I'm even more pleased for yesterday than Dan Scar. It's Bali Mumba, who I think has taken some unwarranted criticism whilst being played in a new position in a higher league than he's played in before under Schumacher. And yes, I do think his finishing could have been better at times. I do think at times he's been loose with his passing. But I think what he offered under the Schumacher regime was brilliant, stretching the pitch, being a foil for Finazaz out there on the wide and allowing the two eights to do their thing. And he's tried really hard to play wherever he's been put this season. And he's not shirked his responsibilities. He's put effort in every game, I think, that he's played, even if he's made mistakes at times. But I also think a lot of the work he does goes unrecognised. He's come to a club when he could well have either stayed at Norwich and fought for his place and been in a squad now that's pushing for the playoffs. He could probably had better offers in terms of maybe better money and better positions, but he was convinced to come and play here, and he wanted to come and play in that forward left role. I think he liked the idea of that, and it seems that's what Schumacher sort of promised him, and he's now accepted that, no, I'll go back to left wing back where I played, and I'll do that for the team, and maybe accepted that his career is not going to go that trajectory where he might want it to go and be that wide forward, but he's going to be more of the wing back, and he's put the effort in, and he's really psychologically probably taken a lot of beatings, a lot of changes and a lot of ups and downs for him this season. But for someone who came back for the adulation he received, to hear through the TV as watching on Sky, everyone singing the tequila version that we have, never getting the Mumba at the same time, but still quality tune. It was really lovely and to sort of see the smile at the end as well. So I think he kind of deserved that. How long have we been saying he just needs a goal? He really needs a goal to pick his confidence up. Been saying that for absolute months. And so sort of weight of that, you know, even an assist or something would have done him good, but the so pleased for him to have got the goal. I think that, you know, his passing accuracy was brilliant. Him and Wright down that side linked up really well. And that's promising. But I just hopefully that can be a catalyst just for the last five games of the season for him to not just to perform, because that will be good for us, but also to sort of get him back into some of the fans' good books that he's been out of, and to remind him that he is loved here, and to be able to put what's been quite a hard season, really, psychologically, I imagine, behind him.
Yeah, again, Stevie Vaughan highlighting the brilliant interview that Rob McNichol had with Bali Mumba on Argyle TV post-game yesterday. And if ever there was an example of a player having a weight taken off his shoulders in respect to his performance yesterday, it probably was Bali Mumba. Just another one of Stevie's comments. I know he's talking about Joe Edwards, because there's absolutely no way I could play as an inverted wing-back, that's for sure. Sam, you have the final pick then. You've got another nine. Well, you haven't actually. You've got a couple of substitutes you could name if you really wanted to. I think I probably know where you're going to go with this, but who's the player you want to touch on?
Well, I assumed that Ben was going to go Callum Wright, because naturally Scar and Wright are the two who've taken the adulation. So I was all lining up my spiel on Bali Mumba, and then Ben chose Bali Mumba. So I'm probably going to go for Callum Wright. Just to quickly echo just briefly what Ben said, I'm really happy for Bali. It's been a tough season for him. Not even a bad season necessarily, but a tough season. Just being out of position in the new formation, getting used to that new formation. Then when we did change formation, him being on his unnatural side, which he said in the interview, he doesn't like being on that side as much. To not have you know, maybe quite lived up to the hopes fans had, but still being a decent player, has been so tough for him. Just to have that goal chalked off at Southampton, that would have been that wonderful cathartic moment. He's had a really tough season, and I'm so, so glad that he's had that moment of being the hero again like he was last season. And I just hope he really takes that into the last five games. My player I would like to talk about, though, is Callum Wright. I think he's also had a very tough season. And I think maybe unlike Mumba, with him, it's more the fact that he's, dare I say, it's not been that good in truth. I mean, even under Schumacher, the games which he started, he often, maybe at best, but in a kind of okay 6 out of 10 performance, or at worst, he would actually have a pretty poor performance. I think his best performances up to now were coming off the bench. He was brilliantly involved in the Stoke win with the late Randall winner. And he was, I think, involved in the home win against Rotherham coming off the bench late as well. So, yeah, I think he had a lot to prove going into the game, because for all the talk of, you know, Foster treated him badly, that kind of thing, and I think Foster almost certainly did treat him badly, at the same time, that doesn't necessarily... Rory in the comments, so I know he's a huge Callum Wright fan. I will caveat that by saying I think he's had some decent starts. I think he was decent at Leicester, despite the fact we lost 4-0. And I think he was decent at Watford in the 0-0 draw at the start, but broadly had some not great displays. But yes, I think Callum Wright was going to give a point to prove, because I think for all the talk about how he was wrongly treated, and I agree he was, I do also think that he maybe didn't quite deserve to be starting. He didn't deserve to be frozen out, and certainly didn't deserve to be exiled from the squad, if that's what did happen. But I don't think he maybe necessarily deserved that starting berth. So the fact he got that one, that was really a case of Neil Dewslip, Kevin Lansdowne saying, right, Callum, go and grab this chance with both hands. And I think he really, really grew into the game. I think his first 10, 15, you could see the rustiness in him. You could sort of see the cobwebs being shaken off in that first 10, 15. He had a couple of slightly sloppy moments in that time. But then he got the ball down, a couple of good touches, and really, really grew into the game. He had some nice passing moves. I think, look, is Callum Wright anywhere near as good as Finn Adams? No, he's not. But is he more of a replacement for Finn Adams than Alfie Devine? I think yes, because I think Devine is a different type of player, more suited to deeper areas. Whereas Callum Wright has that knack of having that little shimmy with the ball, that little dribble forward where he sort of keeps the ball glued to his foot, that little first-time flick into space. A lot of the moves he attempts are sort of reminiscent of that. Is he as good as him? No. And does he have the goal-scoring prowess? Absolutely not. But in terms of that little bit of silkiness, that little bit of fluidity in getting us moving forward, he's as close as we can get to advance of those currently at the club. And I think he definitely was beneficial to us. He was involved in quite a few decent attacking moves towards the end of the first half. He began to tire a little bit, which I think is why he got subbed off. But, you know, it's understandable tiring. You've been on the pitch for the first time in 2 months. So, Callum Wright deserves a lot of credit. Some very clever passes where he just saw a pass that maybe others wouldn't. Some nice little 1-2s with Adam Randall. And I am going to cheat by giving a little bit of praise to Adam Randall, who I think that's the best game he's had in a good few weeks. I really do. We all absolutely love Adam Randall here, but I think he'd be the first to admit that in the later end of the Foster era, he's put in some poor displays. But he's another one who really grew into the game, commanded the midfield brilliantly, and had good interchange with Callum Wright. See, Joe, I'm technically staying on topic, sort of. credit to Randall, credit to Wright. They both were a big part of some good pass and move sequences, both a big part of good off-the-ball pressing as well, and both the big part of transitions from where we broke up the pitch. So both of them deserve credit in my book. I'd say for Wright, that's the best performance he's had all season. For Randall, it's the best performance he's had in a good few weeks, if not more.
And it's lovely to see from the top of the club down, much more engagement, much more happiness, togetherness. As members of the club staff from, you know, throughout the club, the chairman and the chairman's wife, there just seems so much unity again. And, you know, the result was great. But regardless of that, it just feels so nice for, I think, 99% of the toxicity that's been around seemed to have evaporated around that game, before it, during it, after it. And that, you know, I think for the last 5 games, whatever happens now, I think most of us feel like we're kind of back to the club we were in many ways, and the fan base and the one Argyle that everyone, you know, sort of the drum was being banged. It didn't really feel like it, but it feels like it again now to me.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I shared it in our podcast group chat, the TikTok that came out on Thursday. If you haven't seen it on Argyle's TikTok, go and watch it. It's a thing that Charlie Rose does, where he gets the players to show the last picture on their camera roll. If that doesn't put a smile on your face, I'm not sure what will, and you'll draw your own conclusions about a few members of the squad, I'm sure. But I think actually, just rounding this off before we move on to the questions that we got in the comments, keep them coming in, by the way, we will put them to you. We've got around another 25-30 minutes left of tonight's episode is that for once, and I'm going to be that person who perhaps over eggs it a little bit, because we do have to stay grounded about the level of team we were playing, but it was one of those performances where everybody contributed to what was a thoroughly deserved win. I don't think you could pick anybody out too much for anything negative last night. I think everybody played their part. I know people in the comments are saying about, you know, is Hardy leggy? We're going to come on to that in a minute because there are questions about that. But it was one of those nights where it just seems everybody worked hard. And as Ben says, it's the one Argyle mantra, isn't it? And perhaps now we are going to adopt this us against the world mentality, which I remember saying all the way back in August is what we should do. It's how we should approach this season. It is us against the world. Let's head into the comments then. Let's get some questions for tonight. There's a load of questions there about the end of the season and points needed. We'll come on to them at the end. We're going to go on some player specific and recent game specific questions. Christopher Vowles Adam asks, how do we best use Hardy in the remaining games? He definitely needs a rest soon. And there have been one or two other comments. Adam Krieber also asks, can we discuss Hardy? Is it time for Wayne to get a start after last night's cameo? The poor kid. He was on the pitch about 15 minutes, could have had a hat-trick and ended up with a duck egg.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, and I'll touch on Wayne again shortly, but I think on the topic of Hardy and what we're looking to do with him in the games coming forward, I mean, I don't disagree with anyone in the comments. It can happen for a few weeks now. We've been looking at comments, is Hardy tired? Do we need to rest Hardy? Yeah, I absolutely think in an ideal world we do. I don't know about you guys, it could just do into my eye, but yesterday I didn't think he was anywhere near fully fit to put everything into that one that he otherwise would. And unfortunately, we were able to live with that and still be the better side on the back of it. But he does need a rest. The harsh reality is, at this point, I think his rest is going to have to come on the 5th of May, because we are just in a situation now with five games left. And it harks back again. I know I keep saying it. It harks back again to what we did, or rather what we didn't do in January. There needed to be another striker. We knew we needed another striker from the end of August and went through January and still didn't get one. It's a glaring mark. And I know there have been comments, or shall we say hints, in Argyle's press releases since the sacking of Ian Foster, that Foster himself was in control of the transfers, perhaps trying to deflect a little bit of responsibility there. But it's been a serious concern, and it's going to remain a serious concern as to how exactly we use Ryan Hardy going forward. I think he has to start every game. If it's physically impossible, and it might well reach a stage where it is physically impossible for him to start every game at this point, then perhaps we could look to prioritise. If we're looking at next week, then maybe say, well, Leicester's a little bit of a free hit, QPR's a huge game, maybe we want Ryan Hardy to line up and give us the best chance of beating QPR rather than have him run into the ground against some Premier League level defenders on Friday night. I don't know, maybe it'll go that way. Chances are, to be honest, I think he'll start both of them, because I guess he simply has to at this point. Now, maybe I'm wrong, maybe we do go to Wayne, and for all his flaws, he certainly didn't have the worst performance yesterday. Again, we have to consider the standard of the opposition and whether we'd want to read too much into that. But yeah, on another day, he certainly scores the one from the corner that just rebounds off the post very unluckily. The one at the end, I don't think is the best finish, but we do have to credit Johansson, the keeper who, as I've mentioned, is certainly one of the better keepers in the league to keep that out. So maybe on another day, I think he gets at least one, so he can count himself slightly unlucky. But can he do it against the better opponents that, to be honest, all five of our next opponents are going to be? He'll get some cameos, and I'd love to think that he'll get himself on the score sheet at a crucial time. I just cannot see a way at this moment where Juicenip or Nantzkvel are going to say, right, we're going to start Ben Wayne ahead of Ryan Hardy for whatever particular game, just because of how key Hardy is. And yeah, he's being run into the ground, and no, I don't like it, and I think we should have done something to avoid this entirely. It's the reality. And I just think he has to... We're getting to the stage where a 50% fit Ryan Hardy is probably still our best striker. So, you know, it's debatable, and maybe Wayne will come good, and maybe Wayne will prove all of us wrong. But I just cannot see a way where we can't start Hardy in these next five games. And then, for God's sake, give him a lovely holiday over the summer, because he's a bloody aunt at that point.
I'd love to be the person who goes into the dressing room on Monday afternoon or Tuesday and tells 13 goal this season Ryan Hardy that he's not going to start one of the most important games of the season. I'd pay good money to see the reaction to that. In response to just Jana's point, Wayne still isn't great at winning the ball, especially trying to header it. He gets towered easily, but he got up and headed it quite well to crash it against the post in the middle of his three chances yesterday. But I do take the point. Perhaps he does need to be just a little bit more robust. Although I do think it's one of the areas of his game that he's actually done quite well on over the course of the last few months. What else have we got in the comments? Ben, you can take this one again. Adam Krieber sent this one in. In all the talk of recruitment, am I right in saying, yes, Adam, you are right in saying that 9 of the starting 11 were with us last year? Is it time for a rethink and a change of strategy, or was that just Juicenip and Nantzkvel going back to a tried and tested system and squad that they knew they could get the best out of last night?
I think there's a lot to that they knew that those players knew each other. Like the Mumba comment about the lads know where I'm going when I make those cuts and those runs. That was, you know, that kind of togetherness. And when you're nervous, when there's a lot on the line, that kind of intuitive play almost... is what you want. You don't want people having to think, because then they panic potentially. But I also think, like, Forshaw's been injured. He may well have started. JB's injured. He may well have started. And Devine's suspended. And he may well have started. Sorinola's was potentially getting a rest. Maybe that was just bringing Edwards in, part of that mentality of what's of sweeping away the old regime and getting people on the pitch. So, you know, Sorinola, I think, has been a good recruit. I don't think anyone would really argue that he's not added something. At least, well, he's added an assist at least for, you know. But other than that, I think he's performed quite well. And then there's Sousa, who has been relatively good in his cameos, but is a young guy learning his craft and maybe not, you know, fitting into that, like you say, the mentality of it's the old guard who know each other, who are familiar with each other, and who know they can rely on each other. That's nothing against him and his character, but you know, I think there possibly was something in the getting the band back together, as it were, in inverted commas, to put players on the pitch who've been through the trenches, who saw out that title winning season together, who know that when the chips are down they can rely on each other, and they could go out and rely on each other to get that result yesterday if everything went to plan and went well, and it did, I think. As much as has been said, we, you know, it was hairy at times and we could have perhaps scored more. So, yeah, I think that there's at least three injuries or suspensions in there that that count against the January recruitment. Would it have been a better game with any of those players starting? I don't think so, to be honest. I think it was a good performance from the old guard, if you want to call them that. And is that the indictment on the recruitment? Possibly, but again, you know, the blame has been relatively squarely laid at the door of Ian Foster for a lot of that. So let's hope that, and let's not forget as well, some of the recruits that we've made, even some of the signings have been panned by some of the some of the fans over the season. I'm not the biggest fan of Ben Wayne. Callum Wright's taken a lot of stick this season. As Sam himself said earlier, he's not necessarily had the best impact in the starts that he has had. So, you know, has our recruitment suddenly dropped off a cliff? I don't think so. I think, you know, you hit some, you miss some. I think we hit more than we miss. But this January, I think, probably fell below the general par for what the club's been doing in recent years. Let's hope we can say that was Ian Foster's influence and the club are not going to be influenced again by the manager we're going to, or head coach, whatever it is that's next appointed. And we will stick to the data-driven systems that have seemed to have served us in the majority well up to this point.
Sam, I'm going to give you 4 minutes on this next point. 2 minutes apiece, because I'm going to give you 2 points to talk about, of which the first one's literally just disappeared out of my head. I should probably write this stuff down. I'll start you off on the first point and then hope the second point comes back to me. Let's talk about the reaction at full time yesterday, because I think it's important we touch on this. And, you know, there was quite a bit of love going around on social media last night. I must admit, I put out a couple of posts about Nance in particular. But it should also say there was quite a lot of emotion shown, not only by Nance, but Neil Jusnip let off a rare show of emotion for himself, but also the players. Those moments, although we know why, those moments where Dan Scar and Callum Wright were pushed to take the acclamation of the crowd. It was a special end to that game last night, wasn't it?
It was. It really was. So I sort of touched on it in my review, but there's no harm looking into it in a little bit more detail. Yeah. Each and every one of the players came over. All of the players who were playing and who'd been subbed off came over. Even the unused subs who never made it onto the pitch, like Soren O'Leary, even people like him came over as well. All the backroom staff, Jusnip and Nance Gaville. I think with Jusnip, it was a very understated. It was a fist pump. It was an explosion of joy. And then he let Nance take most of the applause. I think it was a clever move by the club to let Nance go do all the media for this game. Because, look, as much as we all have agreed to put any doubts to one side and get behind Neil, I do think Nance Gaville is, shall we say, more universally loved. Would that be an unrisque way of putting it, than Neil Jusnip is? So I think the fact they let Nance be let's be honest, we know Jusnip is the senior figure, but the fact that they let Nance take all the media acclaim and do the Sky interview rather than Neil doing that was a wise move by the club. And I think they've managed to PR around this week brilliantly. I want to say that to anybody in the media team who might be watching our podcast. I think they've handled this week in a way that is absolutely first class, with promoting the positive mood and getting everyone behind the club and getting everyone rallied up. They've done a superb job on that. I think that obviously then, Nance comes over and goes absolutely wild, jumping up and down, fist pumping the crowd. It was like we'd won a cup final. It was almost to the point where I was even starting to wonder, are we sort of over-celebrating this a bit? There's a long way to go. But then I said to myself, no, Sam, don't be so miserable. This is the first of 6 cup finals. The fact that we've still got 5 to go doesn't mean we can't celebrate winning the first one. So,
are you sure it wasn't John who said that? It was you.
No, he wasn't there. He doesn't travel. I should say, by the way, that John has only... I'm joking. I should say, by the way, that John has only missed 3 away games this season. And there was Watford, which we drew 0-0, Middlesbrough, which we won 2-0, and Rotherham, which we won 1-0. So of the games John's missed, we've been pretty good, I have to say. So we're going to be paying him to stay away for Stoke. On all seriousness, it was well worth the celebrations. Callum Wright and Dan Scar got particular applause. Joe Edwards and Adam Randall were going mad. Soren Ola was going crazy like he always does. He's a very energetic guy, isn't he, Matty Soren Ola? Very special moment. It's just got to push on. It's a shame about the other results today. Was that going to be your other point, Joe, or not? Or was it something else?
I was going to add that on to the QPR preview, which we're about to start in the next. We're about to start in the next 30 seconds. So if we quickly segue into that, of course, we don't have too long to wait. Well, we do actually have an extra day's rest than our London visitors on Tuesday night. And bear in mind, one of the days preparation between this evening and Tuesday night for them is going to be traveling. It's going to be, you know, 4 or 5 hours on a coach for them, getting down to Home Park. You know, we don't have an airport. We're cheap. They can't fly. So we do have QPR coming to town on Tuesday night. And before today's results, this was always going to be a big game. Ben, it's bigger now, isn't it? Like, we've sort of pussyfooted around it a little bit, to coin a phrase. Sheffield Wednesday, winners. Huddersfield, winners. You know, Birmingham, unlucky losers today. Stoke battled back to get a point. QPR, losers today. It's been a tough watch, given we've had, you know, not our own game to look at.
It has, but I think a lot of us are positive that we might, if we can build on, you know, if we play like we did against Rotherham, will we get 3 points against QPR? Possibly, maybe, but at least we can build on that. We can use that as the basis of some confidence to hopefully, you know, to improve on that performance. I think before the Rotherham game, if we'd been under Ian Foster, were we hopeful of getting anything at Rotherham, let alone at home v QPR? I don't think so. So I think there's a lot more positivity that we can get the result versus QPR. Yes, the results today haven't gone for us, but we've had weeks where they've all gone for us. We've had weeks where we've had, you know, some go for us, and it's just the way the cookie crumbles, as it's, you know, as the saying goes. If it might be that next week we, or next week, it will be next week, but in the next set of fixtures, we score, you know, we win rather, get home against QPR, and everything goes our way, and we think, what a relief! You never know until it happens. The good thing is that teams around us are all playing each other, including us. Obviously, we're playing QPR, then we've got Stoke away and Millwall away as well. So we do have, in many ways, our destiny in our own hands, and other teams around, well, we do, because we are out of the positions. We can, if we win all our games, we stay up, obviously. But even if we're not winning all our games, I do think that we've got every chance of having a great say in whether we can stay up or not. So with everybody around us playing each other, taking points off each other, I think it's a Birmingham still got to play. Huddersfield, I'm not too sure. They're, you know, Huddersfield are playing a lot of teams around us. There's a few teams with tricky run-ins, like QPR's running isn't easy after they've played us. It looks quite tricky. But having said that, Blackburn's running looked awful, and they've been picking up points willy-nilly. They managed to thrash Sunderland. So we just don't know what's going to happen. I think at least the fact that we've got a fighting chance now of going out. I mean, the result against QPR is probably that will be the biggest win out of the five games, even including Stoke and Millwall, because it will put us, because as well as that game with us and QPR, Stoke are playing away at Swansea. So unless Stoke win that game, if we were to beat QPR, we'd go above both Stoke and QPR, and Stoke are then playing Wednesday in their next game. So one of those is going to be below us, as it were. Or at least one of them is dropping points there. So, it is a massive game, but I think what we just showed against Rotherham was enough of a natal stage of a revival, shall we say. It's got the potential to kickstart and got every belief. I mean, QPR lost today. Is that maybe that the pressure's getting to them? Were they on the beach too early? Or is that going to put a fire under them and they're going to come and absolutely let loose on us? You know, we won't know until the game happens. And obviously the negative Argyle fan in most of us is really worried now that QPR are going to come here stinging and put in a performance with their quality away record. And we're going to then have to go to Leicester having lost and everyone else picking up points. But I think genuinely that QPR are beatable. Sorry about that. I think QPR are beatable. And I think that there's never been a better morale amongst the squad for a long, long time. And I think that the win at Rotherham will really galvanise them, give them the belief that they can go out and get it done.
That's the timer I had installed for when you go over your allotted space this evening to talk. Adam,
it's electric shock.
Let's go straight into the team news. As Ben mentions, QPR's away record compared to their home record. Chalk and cheese, basically. QPR are 23rd, would you believe, in the championship for their home record, yet they're 12th in the table for their away record. Team news for us on Tuesday night was the Alfie Devine is back available from that silly suspension that he picked up at the end of the Bristol City game. What do we think here? Because as David So mentions, there are games in quick succession here. We got 3 games in 7 days. We do have another big game on Friday night, again on the television. What are you thinking team-wise going into this one?
We do, and that's absolutely something to consider going forward, the swift nature of the games coming in. For me, I don't really want to see many changes at all for the one coming up, for a couple of reasons. One, because of the understanding that the players clearly have. The point of 9 of those players being with us last season was an excellent one. I wouldn't necessarily say anything about the recruitment on the back of that, but I would say that those players clearly have an understanding how each other plays, and it resulted in Mumba's goal that ultimately won us the game. So I think it's absolutely key we don't try to mix that up too much. Second of all, because, and I know I mentioned exactly the same with Hardy, but this is the big game of the week. I know Leicester coming down with all their quality and all of the Sky cameras being here again. Don't get me wrong, I'd love for us to put on a show there and get points when we perhaps least expect it. But if you're telling me there's one game this week that we're going to win, it's much, much more likely to be this QPR one. And that one will obviously have the knock-on effect of going above QPR. And as Ben mentions, possibly a few other teams as well, because they're playing each other. So I don't necessarily always come from the school of never mess with a winning team. I think there's a number of reasons why you would want to mess with a winning team on occasion, based on performance, based on who the upcoming opponents are. And if there are some specific threats from QPR, I know Ilias Chair is the sort of player that can beat up defences. But I would suggest that, no, I wouldn't want to see too many changes. I'd want to stick and ultimately try and play on the front foot for it. That's what we know. That's what we're good at. And keeping that understanding there for what is another massively important game. They're coming thick and fast. I'd want to stick with that. Let's try and get the 3 points here, which would be huge in the context of our season, and worry about Leicester after that.
Sam, anything to add team-wise?
Difficult one. I wouldn't make any wholesale changes, certainly. I think whatever we think about the merits of 3-4-3 as opposed to 4-3-3, which we've done to death on this podcast over the season. Some of us, including myself, have actually switched sides on more than one occasion during that debate. I think it's clear that Neil Dewslip has opted for a 3-4-3. And I think it's clear that the 3-4-3, which Neil Dewslip advocates, is certainly more electric and more attacking than the 3-4-3 of Ian Foster. I think that we're not going to, suddenly start to sit deep and hit them on the counter. I think we're going to try and keep the attacking momentum going. Thank you for that comment. I think we're going to try and take the game to them as we should do. I think we can probably do a few individual tweaks for rotation and keeping legs fresh. I think Soren Olaf Edwards might well be one. I think we'll keep the back three. I think the wing back, I think Mumba will definitely stay in situ at left wing back because, again, such a good game. I think we'll keep the CM2. I think Forshaw is a good, great option to have coming on. But I think we'll keep Houghton and Randall as the starting two. Hardy is a tough one because, look, I absolutely get the point of play the most effective striker in the bigger game and maybe rest Hardy for Leicester. But I do feel, going back to the earlier discussion, that Hardy is carrying an injury. There's no doubt whatsoever that the 70, 80, 90% fit Ryan Hardy starts over Wayne or Bundu. But I wonder if we're just seeing him get down to sort of 60 or even 50% fitness. He's got the little, injury bubble on FM, hasn't he? The little orange cross in the older FM above his name. He's definitely not playing at his best level. And I just worry that if we play him too much, not only are we not going to get the best of him, and look, don't get me wrong, I don't think he had a bad game last night. He won a couple of corners, he had a couple of nice touches to the ball. But I just think evidently last game, more so than even in any other game, he was just really visibly blowing and struggling with his movement. I think he was not, you know, the energetic, dynamic Ryan Hardy we all know and love. And I think he has been maybe ran into the ground a bit by Ian Foster. So it is a very difficult one. I can see the case that you would start Wayne on Tuesday or even start Bundu as a striker, just because there is no more terrifying player to have coming off the bench than Ryan Hardy for the last 25 minutes or so, if we're in need of a goal. But then that's a very brave call to do that. Because if we do that and it goes belly up, well, the question will be, why on earth didn't you start Ryan Hardy? So I really wouldn't want to commit either way on that one. I think Hardy will start, just because even if he, you know, maybe if we even say to him, just sit out training on Monday, just don't move, put your feet up and watch a Netflix series until Tuesday night's game, then you can start running again on Tuesday. I think that might be what we have to say to him. I think that's the compromise option, because I don't think we can continue overworking him as we have, because I think not only will that mean we don't get the best out of him, it will mean he could pick up a muscle injury that, God forbid, rules him out for the rest of the season. And that is one thing we really don't want. So I'm 50-50 as to whether I would start him or whether I would rest him. But if we are going to start him, I would certainly give him a very light duty in training, because I think he's very visibly tired. But yeah, Hardy aside, I'd stick with Whittaker, of course. Callum Wright's done well enough to earn another start. I think Devine's got a bit of a pantomime villain status. I don't think he's as bad as people say he is, but he's not a wide forward in a 3-4-3. So I'm going to go Whittaker. Gun to head, I would go Wayne, and I would have Hardy as a super sub, but that could go horribly wrong. I'd go Whittaker, Wayne or Hardy. And right, I'd go Sorinola for Edwards, and I would otherwise go unchanged.
I'm going to be radical if we are going to rest Ryan Hardy, which I don't see us doing for one moment. I'd be radical and go for the old Derek Adams approach of play three wonderful players and just constantly change their positions. I'd play a front three of right, Whittaker and Bundu, and just constantly change their position along the front line every sort of 10, 15 minutes or so. Keep the opposition guessing. But who knows? I don't think that's going to happen. Let's get some score predictions then. We are over the hour mark now, so we are going to wrap it up very soon. We'll wrap around the group. Then I've got one more question to ask you all. Ben, QPR, Tuesday night at home, the score will be?
I'm thinking 1-1, but I'm also thinking the ground's going to be absolutely rocking. I've just got that feeling that, you know, where there's going to be a bit of a release. And that might just do the whole Stoke, Rotherham kind of thing again. Those were two wonderful moments. So I'm going to be optimistic, and I'm going to go with heart overhead and say 2-1 Argyle.
Adam?
I'm exactly the same, actually. 2-1 Argyle, not based on any research, any scientific fact at all, but it's just a feeling that this big game, this atmosphere, we're going to rise to the occasion. So, yeah, 2-1.
Sam?
I think that obviously the results today put a little bit more pressure on. And I think with QPR, they're going to be fighting for their lives as well, because they'll know that if we beat them, we overtake them. And that will suck. They're already sucked back into it as a result of losing to Sheffield Wednesday. They'll be sucked even more back into it if they lose to us. So I think it's a big game for them. It's a big game for us. We surely can't lose 6 in a row at home. I think we're going to draw 2-2.
2-2, a bit of a Desmond. And for what it's worth, I actually think that this could be the night, or one of the nights, one of the occasions this season where perhaps a bit of style is turned on again. I actually think we might go and win this 3-0. I'm going to have my head well and truly on the spike for that. But yes, 3-0 to Argyle. One final question, which has come in. A lot of people have asked the same sort of question. Stevie Vaughan said, obviously, Swansea have been brought into it. You can see at the end there, Marcus has said exactly the same question. And there are one or two in there as well. We've got 5 games to go. We're already 3 points better off than we were when we did the emergency podcast the other night. What is going to be the... I'm going to ask you... We're going to get Aaron to ask this whenever he's hosting between now and the end of the season. Ben, what's the magic number, quickly?
With our goal difference, 48 possibly. 49 I'd be happy with. I think 40... I don't see Birmingham and Wednesday both getting 8 points out of the last 15 points and getting the 50 they'd need to jump us then.
Adam?
I am there on 49 as well. I think with our goal difference and getting to that number, I'd be very disappointed if we went down on 49.
Sam?
49. I would have said 48 before today, but I think today's fixtures bring it up to 49. It's like, well, I get what Ben's saying, and it's probably unlikely that Birmingham and Sheffield Wednesday would both get the 50. But don't forget, if Huddersfield get the 50 and Millwall get the 50, then only one of those two would need to get the 50, not necessarily both of them. So difficult in that respect. Yeah, 49 with a confidence range of 1 point either way. Wouldn't stun me if it took 50. It wouldn't. But it wouldn't stun me if actually they dropped back off and needed 48. Yeah, gun to my head, 49 is what we need.
49. Gaz Brownhigh also says 49. I'm actually going to go 48. I'll take a point off you all. Like a boxing referee would do if you punch me in the back of the head. As I Go Till I Die suggests, the highlights have started on ITV, so we have reached the hour mark. That is enough of us for the evening. Before we go, Tuesday night at Home Park, obviously the PFC displays, Nick and the team have done an unbelievable job today in kitting out the Devonport end with a TIFO, which I only thought existed in FIFA Ultimate Team packs or on videos of South American football. But it appears we're going to have one at Home Park on Tuesday night. So those of you who are in blocks 1 to 5, please, please, please do your bit when you're instructed to on trying to get there going. And those of you who are going to Home Park, look, the pressure's still well and truly on. Today has shown us that already, but this is definitely a roller coaster that we are going to enjoy. And this is something we all, you know, at the start of the season, we'd have taken this at the end of going into the middle of April, that we would still be well and truly with our destiny in our own hands. And let's embrace it. Let's embrace the one Argo. We're united behind the group. It's us against the world. And QPR are just that next team coming to town. As Dave Sarah says, you've got to love football, haven't you, Sam?
Yeah, one more point I want to make before I go. It'd be remiss of the Argyle fans of a slightly older generation, by which I mean probably anyone 30 or over, since they're not really older. Big home game against QPR in April with Championship football at stake. Uh-huh. Not had many of them before, have we? 6 points for both teams, Championship football at stake. If it goes as well as the last one, then we'll be very, very happy people indeed. One cup final down, 6 to go. Me and Ben in the Devonport, and Adam, actually, we're all Devonport end massive here, aren't we? Apart from Joe, I think it's Mayflower. But the Devonport end massive of me, Ben and Aaron will be making sure the TIFO is well seen, and we'll be doing our best to make Home Park rocking on Tuesday. Let's get behind the lads. 5 more points, or maybe 4, or maybe 6, but certainly whatever we need, certainly whatever the case, if it's 3 more on Tuesday, then we're halfway there or more than halfway there. Come on, you Greens.
That commentary that Argo Till I Die has just put up there in words, it still gives me goosebumps when I see that brilliant video that was put out last year with Sparksy doing that. And last but not least, as one comment says, a very happy retirement to David Norris, who hung up his boots this weekend after a very long and distinguished career. All the best, Chuck. Always welcome back at Home Park. So that's it. We've done an hour. We've
welcome back on this pod as well.
Yes, he's more than welcome back at any point. Many thanks to the hundreds of you who have tuned in tonight for your comments, for interacting with the show. We really do appreciate it. Don't forget to check out on the right-hand side of your screen there, the Argyle Live shop. There's plenty of really good merchandise. We've also linked up with PFC displays. So some of the flags that you see in the Lyndhurst and things, some of those are actually on there in print for you to purchase. Which will be really good. Join us again on Wednesday night. I think the plan is we're going to do another one of our BBC 606 style phone-ins full time on Tuesday night. I think Stan, who's doing an absolutely fantastic job on that will be once again in charge of that. So do get involved with the show at full time on Tuesday night. And then join us back here on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. Aaron is back in this chair. Well, not this exact chair, but Aaron will be in a chair of sorts. And he will be joined by Dan Ellard, Finn Allen, and myself as a panelist. I'm sure I can go back to ranting about a referee, given I didn't this week. But we'll be back on Wednesday night. And then, of course, we'll be quickly previewing a game that's just 48 hours after we're on against Leicester City. So you're going to see plenty of us across the course of the week. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday evening. Enjoy your Sunday. And don't forget, Tuesday night is a massive, massive night. We need everybody to turn up, the same atmosphere as we had for Bristol City. We need to really get behind the team from the very moment that Jeremy Simpson blows the first whistle on the occasion. We need to really get behind the team. So from me, from Ben, from Adam, from Sam, lads, thank you for joining us. It's good night. And let's be honest, this is going to be a really nice weekend reminiscing on a win. Laters, folks.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.